again.
Shall we turn again then to the book of Daniel and chapter 6? The book of Daniel and chapter 6. Again, it's a well-known chapter, but we'll not take time to read it all. I'll just read selections from it, but we'll start at verse 1. Daniel chapter 6 and commencing at verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 princes, which should be over the whole kingdom, and over these 3 presidents, of whom Daniel was first, that the princes may give accounts unto them, and the king should have no damage. Then this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king thought to set him over the whole realm. Then the presidents and princes sought to find occasion against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find none occasion nor fault, for as much as he was faithful, neither was there any error or fault found in him. Then said these men, "We shall not find any occasion against this Daniel, except we find it against him concerning the law of his God." Then these presidents and princes assembled together to the king and said thus unto him, "King Darius, live forever. All the presidents of the kingdom, the governors and the princes, the counselors and the captains, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whosoever shall ask a petition of any god or man for 30 days, save of thee, O king, he shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing, that it be not changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which altereth not." Wherefore King Darius signed the writing and the decree. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber toward Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as he did aforetime. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. And then they come so on to the king. Verse 16. Then the king commanded, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Now the king spake and said unto Daniel, "Thy God whom thou servest continually, he will deliver thee." And a stone was brought and laid upon the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet, and with the signet of his lords, that the purpose might not be changed concerning Daniel. We know the king had a very restless night, the poor fellow. And then, verse 21. Then said Daniel unto the king, "O king, live forever. My God has sent his angel, and hath shut the lions' mouths, that they have not hurt me, for as much as before him innocency was found in me, and also before thee, O king, have I done no hurt." Then was the king exceeding glad for him, and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no manner of hurt was found upon him, because he believed in his God. We'll just read a little the end section, verse 25. Then King Darius wrote unto all people, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, "Peace be multiplied unto you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God and steadfast forever, and his kingdom which shall not be destroyed or shall not be hurt, and his dominion shall be even unto the end. He delivereth and rescueth, and he worketh signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who hath delivered Daniel from the power of the lion." So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And that'll do for our reading. I have omitted more or less the verses that deal with the king, because we're not speaking so much about Darius tonight, or even about the den. I want to speak again about Daniel, and we trust the Lord will grant grace for that. I was turning over the page of a secular magazine there recently, and the man was passing the remark, writing from an American background and standpoint, he was passing the remark that of recent times he has been greatly encouraged to notice that there are more people miraculous healings taking place in America than has been seen for many, many decades. He went on to explain what he meant. He said that in his travels, because he was a traveler, in his travels through various parts of that large land, he frequently saw cars draw up into parking lots that were marked for the disabled. And he said people jumped out very fit and well. And he had come to the conclusion that there was a great increase in miraculous healings. Of course, we very much appreciate that our modern society has taken note of the needs of the handicapped, the needs of the disabled, and many different things have been put in place in order to encourage such people, whether from accident or congenital illness or war or whatever it is, to encourage and allow such people to live as normal a life as possible. That is a very, very commendable thing. In our politically correct society, of course, we are really not supposed to speak about handicapped people. The rather proper form of expression is those who are physically challenged. And certainly some of them that I have seen, even with their handicap, they rise to the challenge very well. And it is amazing the amount of normality that they can achieve and the amount of accomplishment that they can register. Of course, in the meeting tonight, I don't think we have too many physically challenged. There may be some, I don't know, I don't see many. But you know, we are spiritually challenged people. We have a handicap. We've heard about the flesh already today. We are seriously handicapped by the indwelling flesh and will be until that cloudless resurrection morning. And yet, God has put in place quite a number of devices and provisions so that spiritually handicapped though we be because of our Adamic links, that we can live as normal a Christian life as possible. And were we to use the provisions which God has so liberally put in place, I believe we could do a little bit better. Some of us are crippled. Some of us are badly cataract. Some of us are hard of hearing, when really we're not rising to the challenge, and it could be much better. The man that we have read about in these meetings today, in the earlier session, and now in this one, he was certainly a man who rose to the challenge. And he rose to it admirably. And his handicaps, not so much his personal handicaps, but his circumstantial handicaps, were quite amazing. And yet he shone for God, and stood for God, and served for God in these difficult settings. We've already thought about the earlier session, where Daniel was, shall we say, under pressure because of what he wouldn't do. He wouldn't take the food and so on. And now, this evening, in this particular chapter, Daniel is under pressure because of what he did do, because of his life of prayer and spiritual discipline and so on. So it lets us see that the world will never leave the Christian alone. The child of God will be pursued, whether it is negatively or positively. The foe will constantly be upon his track. Daniel, unlike chapter 1, is alone here. In chapter 1, he had three companions. And those four were again involved closely in chapter 2. In chapter 3, the three companions had a crisis, minus Daniel. Now, Daniel has a crisis, minus the three companions. Maybe they have already passed on. I don't know for sure. So that we have, in this chapter, something of the loneliness of living for God and how a man was able to cope with the spiritual and psychological pressure of that. Now, just to let you know the direction I hope to take, and I'll try and say what I have to say for various reasons, obvious reasons, and get finished. I want to think, first of all, a little bit about the times and the time in which these events took place. Then I want to think about the target in the chapter. Daniel set up as a target. Then I want to think about the tactics, the different tactics which the enemy employed. We will think again of a man with convictions, and because of his convictions about certain matters and in certain areas that I will mention, he triumphed. And as the chapter concludes, I hope to conclude fairly soon with a word about the testimonial that was given to him in this particular triumph. Well, as far as point one is concerned, the times have changed. The man upon the throne is not only a new king, but he is the representative of a new empire. We are no longer under the auspices of Babylon. We are now living under the regime of the Persians. The policies are different. The potentate has changed. The despotic rule of Nebuchadnezzar is over. There was an autocratic thing about Nebuchadnezzar. Whom he would he slew, whom he would he kept alive, nobody dared to argue. He needed no advice. And if he wanted to kill you, he asked no questions. The Persians were different. They had 120 different princes and satrapies. There was a bureaucracy in the Persian Empire that a good deal softened the autocracy of the Nebuchadnezzar regime. So that the times have changed. The amazing thing is that although things have changed politically, for the man of God, they're just as tough as they ever were. We don't know what the next government might be. We don't know who the future Taoiseach will be. We don't know whether there will be a change of party or not. But remember, changes in politics usually mean very little positive changes for the people of God. Daniel found himself as much a target now as he had been to the previous setup. Of course, things have changed with Daniel. Not only have the times changed politically, but things have changed. Well, I couldn't put a precise figure upon it, but we're talking in Daniel chapter 6 now about a man in his 80s. It always touches my heart to think about an old man in the last half of his 80s spending a night amongst lions. The boy and his teens, those days are long since gone. Much water has run beneath the bridge of life. The same man in his 80s. Times have changed. And troubles have changed. But as far as conviction and character is concerned, and principle, Daniel is still the same. You know, I speak of somewhere in between those two dates that I just mentioned. And all I say is this, what has often been said, but it's worth reminding our hearts of it again. I said a good deal in the previous meeting to younger people. And I want to tell us all just now, you know, time is a tester. When I was younger, not too long since, I used to look upon older brethren. They didn't know a word of Greek. They didn't know a letter of Hebrew. They never put their finger on anything that had the name of Microsoft about it. They were a bit slow. They were a bit dozy. And I used to think they were using up excessive oxygen at times. But you know, I've changed my mind now. I see a man that never broke the speed limit and he's in his 80s. And there's maybe arthritis in a joint or two, but he hardly ever misses a meeting. And you know, I think to myself, the Christian life's a long haul. The dangers are very sinister. The problems are many. And a man that has been able to stay the course, you know, you give him your full respect. Younger people, you know, it's a tough path. Don't let the person putting the armor on boast like the man that's putting it off. Here's a man in his 80s, and it's great to see just the pure consistency of his unwavering devotion and his undiluted principles. May God help each one of us to take a page from his book. The times, I say little or nothing more about that. I promised to say something about the target. You know, here he is again, and he becomes the focus of enemy attack. I've already said the world will never leave the child of God alone. It's coming this time from a rather different angle.
You see, some of these older Christians whom I have spoken to, they have sometimes confided in me a little bit, and things that I've heard them say, it has given me to see this, that as you get on in Christian experience, instead of things getting easier, sometimes they can increase in their difficulty. Don't expect it to ease off. You see, when Daniel was a lad of, say, 18, he mightn't have liked it, but he could have had a go at the lad. The test of the lions would have been a little bit more suitable within his power, virile and strong and fit. When he was a man in his late 80s, all those dainty dishes of Nebuchadnezzar, you don't want big feeds when you're in your 80s. He could have said, it wouldn't have been any great self-denial to say, I'm not going to touch those big things now because I have to take a late supper or I'm up all night. Didn't come like that. He got the test of the dainty dishes when he was young and could have taken it. And he got the test of the bearded lions when he was in his 80s and it was too tough for him. You never know what tests come. And I'm just saying that just to put us into focus that life can be very difficult and unpredictable. It's good that God never changed. And I hope to see some of the resources which Daniel had that enabled him to cope with it. Some of you older brethren, you know, you're not home yet. Neither am I. And may God help us to tread softly until we pass through the sanctuary gates and rocks and storms we'll fear no more when on that eternal shore. The target was rather different, as I've already hinted. On the first occasion in chapter number 1, they were launching their attack upon Daniel's food. If we can get this stuff into this young man, we have ruined his future. When Daniel was standing there in chapter 1, he hadn't at that time received any of the great visions with which you all are so familiar. As far as that young teenager was concerned, standing there, as I talked about in that Imperial College, as far as God is concerned, that teenager had a special future. And the world made an attack upon him, and if they could have brought him down in his late teens, the future that turned out to have such potential for God would have been lying in smithereens before his 20th birthday. You know, I've been thinking greatly. Now, there could be younger folks here today, and only God knows what you can accomplish for him. There's maybe a 15-year-old boy here. Mind you, I'm no ancient, but I remember when I was 15, I lapped up meetings like this when there were men at them that could preach. I just loved them. 15. Maybe someone here, 18. You be very cautious, because if you make a mess of it between now and 25... you could put a ball and chain around your ankle that you'll have to drag to your dying day. Attack his future. Get the food into him. I tell you, there are some strange dishes that are still being set upon the table of the prince of this world. Concoctions that sit upon the dishes of materialism and hedonism and relativism. And if people will only swallow them, they'll be poisoned forever. It's food for thought. We need food for our body. But there's also food for the mind. And you need to be very selective. Now, of course, things have changed. It's not now so much this man's future. He hasn't much of a future left as far as time is concerned. I couldn't tell you the age at which he died. But being in his late 80s, presumably things didn't last too much longer. Maybe a few years. It's not his future. But they're going to launch an attack upon his faithfulness. That's the word that comes up in this chapter. It says that they saw that he was faithful. And they knew there's a man. And he has lying behind him now the record. The record of 70 impeccable years. And they say, if we can bring him down now, That will be a great accomplishment. So much for the target that is before them. Now, as far as why were they so much against Daniel? Let us think about that for a minute. Well, obviously, from the early part of the chapter, in this whole new administration and the whole setup of these presidents and the different satrapies that the Persian Empire was divided into, Daniel had a very prominent position, and he was doing so well in his administration that it tells us the king was thinking of giving him another step up the ladder. But his contemporaries, and perhaps those who were on the step of the ladder beneath him, they didn't like it. And the old bitter gall of envy kicked into play. And they said, now, we're going to get this man. We are told about Daniel that there was an excellent spirit in him. Now, I'm not going to preach along this line tonight, because our brother, Mr. Grant, mentioned this earlier. He spoke about 1 Peter 2, strangers and pilgrims and difficult employees and all, and so on. You know, Daniel, even though he worked in some very difficult bureaucracy, he kept an excellent spirit. That's a great thing. An excellent spirit. You see, all of us here in public works, always watch your... A bad-tempered Christian is never a good advert for Christian, an excellent spirit. It tells us that there was no error and there was no fault. I take it when these other boys made up their accounts, and these accounts were going into the royal treasury, the books had to pass through for the final audit through the hands of the great Daniel. Any wrong figures in the boxes, no chance. Any fiddling and diddling, they used to do that in the old system. This man that's over affairs now, he's as straight as a die. There's neither fault nor error. He was faithful in all his matters. And then, when they came to speak to the king about this particular man, they said, look, king, when they found Daniel, they said, look, there's a man of the captivity of Judah, and we got him prey. I'm jumping down the story. Now that doesn't come in until you get down a good bit. A man, they didn't say, look, King Darius, the best man in your administrative empire, we have found him in a difficulty, Prince Daniel. No, they said, a man of the captivity of Judah. This was anti-Semitism. So they're against this man. Now, I want to just put these two. They're against this man for two reasons. They don't like him because of his righteousness. And they don't like him because of his race. Because he's a Jew. And because he's a man who's straight up and down. And they're determined to remove him. Dear brother, I don't want to be negative on Julie. But I want to say this. And this might apply now, I'm moving on to a rather different sphere. This might apply to some brother in the meeting who finds himself on the ladder of promotion. Finds himself in a position of top or middle management. Like Daniel, in many senses you have had a success story. But let me say this. When all is said and done, remember the world doesn't like you because of what you do. And because of who you are. The way he did things, and because of who he was, and their envy burned and boiled, and that envy was against the excellency of Daniel. They concocted the edict, this whole business about prayer that I'm coming to mention. So that Daniel now becomes the target. Maybe there's a brother here in the meeting tonight, and you have just become the target of maybe some of this internal malice, maybe the company where you work, or whatever it is. Maybe there's a sister here that's being the victim. The victim of unrighteous practices in the workplace. We never know, because these things are constantly up to date. But they watched it every way, and they said, if we can get the slightest... And they said, we can't get a catch at this man at all. He doesn't seem to slip. So they said, we'll have to look. We'll have to take a deeper look. Ha ha. They said, we don't like his success. We don't like his standards. But they said, well, listen, tell me this. Where does this man get the secret of his strength? He seems to be unassailable. He seems to be unstoppable. There must be something behind all this. They said if we took it out, if we took it on any other person, we could find a hole, and with the old machinery that spins in our day, the machinery of spin and so on, we could bring it. They couldn't do it with Daniel. And they said there's something behind this man that is the reservoir of all his success. So they said, you know what it is, boy? They said, look, this man has a private life with God. So said, I don't mention that to Darius. But they said, we're going to spring out this edict. And he says, if we can get, without mentioning, if we can get an edict drawn up that will stop this man praying for a month, he says, we'll down him. Because this praying business is the thing that seems to be holding him up. And if we can take away the praying for a month, he said, we'd just stand back with our arms folded and watch the man collapse. So, of course, the edict went through. I'm not going into the details of that. And the greedy appetites of those men. You know, I often wondered which of the lions in the chapter were worse. Was it the lions at the end of the chapter? Or was it those men at the start of the chapter with animal appetites? And if they had had their way, they snarled and they growled and they yawned and they yelled, and they would just have torn Daniel limb to limb in their envy and jealousy with their animal appetites. God says, I'll give you men a taste of what lion supper's like before it's over. And they got it. And the men who were fed to the lions had acted like lions. And they were just reaping what they sowed. But again, that's a side of the chapter that I'm not going into. So that now we're coming to the very... What's the tactic? Daniel is the target. We want to bring this man down. We don't like his righteousness. We don't like his race. We don't like the way he does things. We will bring him down. So we will launch an attack upon his devotional life. And if we can get that devotional life stopped, you know, this is the burden upon my heart now for a number of minutes in this meeting. I believe, brethren and sisters, that the lion, spiritually, we have been hearing from our brother of 1 Peter and the many links between 1 Peter and the book of Daniel, the fiery trial and the roaring lion and so on. Peter was written from Babylon, etc., etc. Peace be multiplied. This letter, Peter, the only other letter in your Bible that says peace be multiplied, apart from Peter's, is Nebuchadnezzar's letter in Daniel chapter 4. But I'm not going to go into all that. There's a close link that you can follow through. I'm talking now about the roaring lion. I believe in our busy age that the devil is making an all-out assault on the devotional life of the Lord's people. Now he says, if I'm going to bring those people down publicly, and if I'm going to get those people to stand powerless, he says, if I can stop them praying privately. The attack hasn't, the tactic hasn't changed in the slightest. Daniel heard about the decree. He knew it was signed, sealed, and settled. And Daniel marched into Darius, and he said, Darius, this is disgraceful. Do you see the way that I have served you? And you've allowed this to be concocted? He said, this is a total... Daniel went into his house. Just as calm as you like. And the old lions have already started licking their lips. They've starved them for a week. He knows all about it. Just went into his house. Daniel has seen too many battles solved in that chamber. Unflustered, unchanged, unexcited, not muffed or dazed in the slightest, he just went into his house. Can I ask you, dear brother, you know, you want to be preserved in your work, and I trust you will be. I want to talk to you tonight about your house. see, this is just the opposite to the thinking in the world. They tell us now that if a man is a public position, I'm thinking of politics or a position in state, it doesn't matter how he lives. Doesn't matter about his morals. Look, he's a public position here, and that's totally distinct from his private life, and the two of them are not causally connected. I think I heard tell of that or something. They're not causally connected. They're totally separate. You know, the Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches that what I am in private has a deep impact on how I will behave in public. Young people, you will never survive in university unless you have a private life with God. Brother, university unless you have a private life with God. Brother in business, with all the cut and thrust and the competition and the temptations to compromise that are aplenty, you will never survive unless you have a private life with God. Now, Daniel had a number of convictions here. And it was those convictions that enabled him to be shielded as a target and enabled him to evade the tactic of these wicked men. The first thing that he had a conviction about, and I'll mention a few of them, I'll not take time to mention them all. He had a very clear conviction about his time. Tells us there in verse number 10, this man's devotional life. Daniel knew the writing was signed. He went into his house, and his windows being open in his chamber towards Jerusalem, he kneeled upon his knees 3 times a day. And you say, now, listen, boy, you're a busy man. You're a very busy man. You have about the top post here in government. And he says, yes, 3 times a day. He said, all the duties that I carry on my shoulders out there, he says, I can only carry them because I get my strength in here. And he said, my time there in that bureaucratic office at the pinnacle of power in this empire, he said, my time there is index linked to my time here. I want to say that if we are going to be able to survive in this secular world, we need to be very convicted about how we use our time. Now, how do you use your time in your house? Well, you say I have a lot of things. I have some time wasters in my house. One of them's called a telephone. So don't be ringing me before 8 o'clock in the morning or after 10 o'clock at night, and you'll be my friend forever. And if you do ring at 10:30, I'll tell you what you might discover. You might find the lion. Just, no, no. Telephone. What about you younger folks on the internet? Oh, you say, should we not have the... What about the television? What about the video? You say, should we not have those things? I told them the other day that my problem is I couldn't afford them. I don't have a television because, honestly, people, I couldn't afford it. You see, if it's a matter of buying them, I could buy 6 of them or 22-inch screens each, as far as euros are concerned. But I couldn't afford the time. And if I give my time bowing to the silver screen and cruising through cyberspace, I'll find I'll have less time for this book. Daniel had a conviction 3 times. He said, as soon as I step out through the door of my house and open the door of my office and sit down at my desk, he said, the pressure's on. He says, I'm being assaulted from every side. But he said, I can only stand that pressure because of time spent alone with God. It says he went up, he went to his house and he went into his chamber. Mr. Darby says in his Bible, he went into his upper chamber. Now, I like that. You know, climbing up, Some of them told me in some of the books, I don't know that there's much foundation for it, but it's a great point for a preacher. So I'll hold on to it. Some of them said in the books that they got from the idea from this word, Aliyah, that it meant an upper chamber that had been an add-on to the house. When Daniel went down to the estate agent down there in the middle of Babylon, and he bought, saw this house, he says it's got 3 reception rooms, and it has got 4 bathrooms, and it has got a good dining room, and it has got, oh well, I don't know what else. But he says there's an attic that I need to put on. He says above the level of the street and above the normal, he said, there's a dimension that's not on this house that I need to build on. You know, I love to see this old, before he went down into the den, this old man of 87 or so had climbed up the stairs into this little attic. Darius never got there. The conspirators never got there. The lions never got there. This man not only had a hand upon his time, but he had a hand on the throne. You say once he got into that upper chamber, above the level of the street, he sang little hymns. And he read the church greetings calendar. God help him. It says he kneeled down. And it says he prayed. And it says he made supplication. Oh, every one of those things burns into my soul and touches my heart. But you say you're an old fella now. Look, sit. I can't understand some of these fellas in their 40s sitting in meetings. They wouldn't even get down to pray. And their old men get down to pray. I'll say, brethren, it's only a wee notion of mine. I love that if you can get down to pray, get down to pray. I love to see men kneeling. See the old man. I don't know whether arthritis or not, but there he was, and he got down. 3 times every day, with regularity, with consistency, with discipline, and he prayed, and he made supplication. I want to say tonight the importance. Oh, I'm making an appeal for the importance of the Christian zealously and jealously guarding his devotional life. Not everybody can have it. Some of you dear folks are in homes where you couldn't have a room. The Lord knows all about that. Maybe you could go to a garage somewhere. I myself spent a good while in a pigsty, cleared out and painted up with the carpet and so on. Some of the happiest times of my life were spent in that little chamber. I'll say to all you young people, it might be the halls of residence. It might be the home that you've just set up. If you have to empty the television room to make it a sanctuary of prayer, you do it. Because it'll become the best room in the house. Will you get away, and will you get up, and will you get down? Because the world out there is sinister and cruel. And Daniel knew, he says, I need the help of God. I better keep over here to the left. You know, there's more. It tells us when Daniel went into his house, and when he went up into that little chamber, upper chamber, it says he opened his window. It does not. It says his window was open. When Daniel heard about the lions, he wasn't running in and trying to get the window open to act as if he was a holy Jew. Not at all. The window was open. I think it was a window in the roof. And Daniel looked out through his valleys. Away above the tall buildings of Babylon's architecture. And his heart longed for the city of his fathers toward Jerusalem. You know, the direction of this man's life was orientated by Jerusalem. The temples of Babylon and the big things of Babylon never gave this man his bearings, even though he had been in it for 70 years. He says, I'm still a stranger here. How would you say, have a bit of sense, man? Did you see the place was wrecked 60 years ago?
Did you not catch on, man, that the first boss that you worked for here, big Nebuchadnezzar, he sent his armies and they just leveled. There's no temple there at all, man. Do you not know?
You know, it was the place of the name. And Daniel organized his life according to the sanctuary in Jerusalem. Younger people here tonight, if you want to have direction in your life, you always organize your life according to the place of God's name. The assembly. That will keep you, that will help you with a Christian union.
Make your I'm not speaking against our dear brother here. He just made that one comment about, but I'm telling you, many people wonder, how do I, what union do I go, what Christian groups? I know that you need fellowship. Dear people, in the fear of Almighty God, let me say, the only fellowship of testimony that I see in the covers of this great volume is assembly testimony. And let me say, if you open your window on Tuesday night, and you open your window on Thursday night, or Wednesday night, or whatever it is, and you always keep your link and take your bearings from the assembly of the Lord's people. Look, no matter how many exams or studies you have, and I know that, I don't know that much about it, but I know a little bit about it. Do your best to be present amongst the Lord's people. Open your window. Don't be closing yourself off. And don't be going into any room where you have to pull the blinds down. Because you're going to do something secret and something sordid. Keep an open window. So that whatever goes on in here is compatible with the sanctuary. Even though it was 700 miles across desert country. Going back to the prayer of Solomon. Here's a man and he's living with a conviction about time. And a conviction about the throne. And a conviction about the temple. You say it was he made a queer flurry about this. No, the Bible says he did all this just as he did aforetime. That's just the way, I could smile. The humor of the Bible, I'll do that. I'll not say when, I'll never be back here. Don't I? Well, maybe if I did, they might invite me back. I'll preach on the humor of the Bible. You see, old Darius, they got him cheer girls and everything into his room to cheer him up, and he couldn't even get over sleep. No wonder. And tablets, that's what Mr. Garvey says, dancing girls, music of instruments, it says in our Bible, but these were whole choir dancing girls they got into town. The man was nearly distracted, and he was up and down all night and walking the streets. Daniel was lying in bed. Daniel's great. Daniel was just at home. His home was a sanctuary of strength. I'll tell you, far better be in Daniel's place of prayer than be in the king's palatial dwelling with the presence of God. And I can't see the clock, so that's great. Now, he did a poor time. I want to say a little bit very quickly here. I talked about this man's heavenliness getting up above. I talked about this man's humility, bowing down with his knees. I've spoken about this man's hope. You know, thank God we have hope. Our hope doesn't lie in Babylon. It's Jerusalem the golden, looking out through the window above the desert waste of Babylon's city. I talked about this man's sense of helplessness. Oh, he says, I need God. I haven't spoken, and I'll not speak about this man's sense of history. He says, I don't belong here. He says, my history really lies back there. Never forget your roots. If you're linked with God's assembly, remember, it's a spiritual history that's well worth remembering. No matter where you ever go, always recall the links, the historical. And I want to speak just now about this man's habits. You know, it's very important to have good habits in your life, as he did aforetime. Habits of praying. I'll speak very humbly. I don't know how often you want to pray. You know, some men could pray for 2 hours. I'm 100% sure and 9 kids out of 10 I had to sleep in ages before that. I couldn't pray for 2 hours. And there's men can pray for 20 minutes in a meeting. I couldn't even do that. I don't know how they do it. Some people can pray long. Other people can pray often but short. Some have time in the morning. Some of you mothers with little ones, I would know nothing about that. You wouldn't have that. You maybe have time in the evening. I don't know how your life runs, but I'm saying this. While we're not making any legislation, you try and develop the habit of having a quiet time with the Lord. Now, if you have a quiet time with the Lord, read a little psalm, enjoy His word, pray to Him. It doesn't need to be 2 hours long. 15 minutes genuinely spent in quiet devotion, secluded devotion before God. I can guarantee to you, it will give you a foundation for your day. And no matter what else comes, in school, in office, or in shop, if you have that foundation with God, you'll have something to build on. And you'll be approaching the difficulties of the day from a position of strength. Some of you, brethren, have tough regimes to work in. But I'm saying this. This is where the strength, this is the reservoir that feeds into it all. That upper chamber, it was like a reservoir that was spiritual gravity. It funneled down into Daniel's life, the supplies that he needed when he was down on the street. Dear brother, the devil wants to annihilate the quiet time in our busy world. And if he can do that, he knows that he robs us of our power. That's the burden upon my heart. I'm not about the sermon. That's what I'm really interested in. You know, can I say, and I'll go on. I'll not just say I'll close with this. That little things in life are important. You know, we're looking big things and all that. But this little business of a few minutes with God, you have that. You know this has been quoted 1,000 times. You know the rhyme that when Shakespeare's King Richard III, when he was meeting Henry of Richmond, Earl of Richmond, and he jumped off his horse, or the horse lost a shoe and he had to jump off and he cried, "I seize my kingdom for the want of a horse." And ever since that, people have said, for the want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For the want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For the want of a horse, the battle was lost. For the want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. All for the want of a horseshoe nail. I'll tell you, many a testimony has been lost. Many a mighty man, many a useful Christian lady has been brought down, and when it was all traced back, this nail that gives a life a sense of fixture was neglected. Watch the nails. Watch the nails. Watch the habits. It was Richard Earle, the novelist, he said what you've often heard. Sow an act, sow a thought, and reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. Young people, I say to you, if you want your life to count for God, develop holy habits, because they're important. They might be small, but their fallout will be amazing. You see where the attack was? Of course they couldn't do it. You see, it was an awful business. Daniel going in amongst those lions and all, and lockjaw lions they called them. It was an awful business for him to land down amongst them, and he must have been eaten out at all. The struggle was over by the time Daniel got to the den. The struggle was over. The biggest suffering was in the chamber, where he threshed it out with God. And once he had it settled in the upper chamber, the den of lions was absolutely harmless. That's where things are settled, brethren, with the throne and with the sanctuary. And I'll not emphasize any more about it. All I'll say is this. You know, when it was over, this man who had been targeted and victimized and vilified, and this man who came out victorious because of his convictions about the things that I have just mentioned, his testimony, the people said across the nations of the Persian Empire, what a great man Daniel is. No, the people said, what a great God Daniel serves. That is, Daniel's life reflected glory, added glory for the God of heaven. Paul said, he said, the only thing that counts to me is this, that Christ should be magnified in my body. He says, well, live or die doesn't matter. He says, living and dying are irrelevant. He says, but this is not irrelevant, that Christ should be magnified. Just when I say that, I mention, Daniel, listen to this now, just for 30 seconds. Daniel is an innocent man, not sinless, but faultless. He's wrongly accused. He's falsely tried. He's put into the place of death. When they get him into the place of death, they put a stone against the opening and they seal it. A little later, he comes walking out from the place of death. The seal is broken, the stone is taken away, and God gets universal glory. You say, that sounds familiar. You know, there's a greater than Daniel. He was absolutely sinless. He's our Savior tonight. He was falsely accused. He was put in the place of death. They put a seal upon the stone. He emerged in resurrection triumph. And when the web of history has been severed from the loom and the whole thing has been gathered up, every tongue will confess and every knee will bow that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. I'll make bold to say that this was Daniel's greatest hour. He never was so like Christ as in chapter 6. And dear brethren, that's what this whole business is about. You say, preacher? No. Being a missionary? No. What God wants is men and women to be like Christ. In every sphere. That's what this man was just like. You know, when he went into the den, he had already received some of those revelations. Daniel's not written chronologically. Chapter 7 and 8. He had already received the visions of 7 and 8 before the trial of chapter 6. And I can tell you, some of those visions must have stood him in good stead. When the big beast in chapter 7 came out with many heads, as many heads as we have in this meeting, snarling and biting and fighting and getting on. In chapter 7, God just put it into the fire. Daniel got a vision of what was going to happen in the future. And when he was going to the den at last, he says, if God can control the beast of chapter 7, I will. Right. There are leopards and buffaloes and everything in chapter 7 would frighten the life out of you. Divine revelation. Stand up. We pray, but I'll say, our brother pray, we'll say this. We read this morning, Daniel purposed. We read tonight, Daniel prayed. We read in the last verse of Daniel 6, Daniel prospered. Purposed, prayed, prospered. What a man. May God help us to grow into his stature for his glory.